Nathan Fraser Show, episode number 60, How to Get Sales Without Being Salesy, with our very special guest, Landon Porter.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism. God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
Free Market Squad in a place to be. Thank you for taking an hour out of your week to hang with me. I am your host with the Hero Complex, the High Priest of Propaganda, Nathan Fraser. You, more importantly, you are the Free Market Squad. And this week we've got a fantastic interview with Landon Porter. We're going to go over how to get more sales without being salesy. Nobody wants to be that slimy, sleazeball salesperson, but we all need to get sales in order to stay in business. So Landon is here to teach us about how to approach your selling relationships in a way that is conducive with who we naturally are and how to attract the right type of people and a lot of other stuff. We get into how relationships affect sales, how raising children has taught him a bunch of stuff about sales. So without any further ado, let's just jump right into it with Landon. Landon Porter of the Sales Gorilla, welcome to the Nathan Fraser Show. I'm glad to have you. How you doing, brother?
I'm fantastic, Nathan. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So we're going to have a long and windy conversation, I'm assuming. I'm going to give a little bit of an introduction for you from what I know of you. You're a local Colorado guy, just like myself, and we got connected through, I believe, through Ben Settle's El Bimbo's Lair. Is that where I met you?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. And we got connected through there, started talking on Facebook. I really dig what you're doing, and so I wanted to have you on. You got a lot of gorilla stuff going on, so we'll talk about that as well. But introduce yourself to the audience and kind of let us know what it is that you do.
Sure. So like Nathan said, my name's Landon. I spent about 15 years in sales. Started in real estate. I did that for about 3 or 4 years, and then I went into business-to-business finance, financial products, so like credit insurance, factoring, credit reporting, the whole gamut. And so I'm a sales guy, right? But I hate being a sales guy. Well, through that process, I spent 5 or 6 years getting really good at dragging people through the sales process to where they only had really two options. They could buy what it was that I was selling, or they could hang up the phone. And long story short, I didn't like myself. And I didn't like my clients. So I started looking at that process in a way where, what if I could bring on clients that I really liked so I didn't have to deal with not liking myself and then all the BS that comes with clients that you don't like? So here we are now, 2017, about 15 years later. And I decided to get out of the sales game completely. And my wife and I did a parenting course starting about 2016, and towards the end of the year, I kind of found a Facebook marketing course, and through interactions with different people that I was learning Facebook ads alongside, they were telling me about, well, I had this experience, I got this guy this many leads, it didn't work out, and the conversations just kind of evolved, and all of a sudden, I've got people saying, dude, you need to teach people how to do this, and I'm like, do what? Sales, but like the way you do it. And I was like, okay, so here we are. So that's me in a nutshell. I'm from Colorado, father of two. I've always lived up against the foothills. I love buying. I hate being sold to. So that's kind of my story.
I think that's most of us.
Right.
So let's, I kind of want to unpackage that. You said you hated being a salesperson, you hated selling, you hated, I think that's something that I don't really suffer from that because I don't sell things unless I actually believe in them. I rarely take on any kind of copywriting gig unless I really believe in the product or the service. It's hard for me to sell something that I wouldn't actually buy myself because I guess it's always easier to sell when you're just transferring enthusiasm. What was it about selling that you hated? Because I hear a lot of people say, well, I want to make sales, but I don't want to be salesy, and I hate selling. And even if they have something that they absolutely believe in, they still hate selling. And I guess maybe there's some kind of disconnect for me that I'm not able to understand why. So in your experience, what was it about selling or being salesy that you weren't a fan of? Can you kind of unpack that a little bit?
Sure. I'm gonna go back to something you said a minute ago. You don't sell something that you don't believe in. And at the end of the day, that whole thing is because you have integrity, right? Well, here's what I hate about selling, and here's why most people have a really hard time with it. The person that's selling the thing wants to sell the thing, and they think they know best. They think they know better than the person that they're trying to sell it to. That's one group of people. The group of people that have gotten really good at that process can train people to cold outreach, and I call it dragging somebody through a sales process and basically poking their pain with a fork to the point where they're like, I give, I give, I give, and they buy the thing. Well, in that process, the communication between the person selling the thing and the person they want to buy their thing is not what most people would consider excellent communication between two people where everybody has each other's best interest in mind. Even though salespeople say that, sales trainers and sales managers will basically force you to believe that they don't know they need it, they don't know they want it, but they have to have it, and you're going to be the one that saves them and makes sure that they get the thing. And at the end of the day, that's just not real. It's not reality. Now, 50, 60 years ago, when people didn't have the ability to know all of the different solutions out there to all of their different issues, yeah, absolutely, that made sense. But now, with the technology that we've got, if you want something or need something, you can find it. So I know that was kind of a long way around it. What I don't like about sales is all of the cliches that we don't like, the used car salesman approach, you know, people knocking on your door, interrupting your dinner, all of that kind of stuff. And then basically using language patterning, high pressure, you know, guilt, all of those icky kinds of things to get somebody to buy something. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, most of the people that go through that process and buy, it's typically because they're not strong enough to tell somebody no. And then when that person comes back for the 19th time to overcome that objection, they can still say no. It's that process that I don't like.
Gotcha. I see so frequently by now we've got limited stock of this digital product. We've only got 4,000 left of this digital thing that exists digitally. And if you don't buy it within the next 18 hours, it's gone forever. And then on hour 19, oh, our product was so popular that we've brought it back for another 24 hours.
Uh-huh. It's just a bunch of bullshit, really. I mean, even take out the digital aspect of it. There's real scarcity, but if you leverage that as a means to try and get somebody to make a decision, you're a shitty communicator. That's just in my opinion, you know, but that's how I see it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it works, though. People do put value in scarcity. And I mean, I guess if there is a limited supply, you kind of have an obligation to let people know that it is limited, but I see it falsified so often, and I can see where people would get sick of this stuff. I also understand how humans work, and I don't know, man. It's always like that. It's like a high wire or a razor thin wire in between. I guess it's what your intention is. Is your intention to only connect people with the product or service that actually need it and just be an information provider that lets them know? Or is your intention to kind of manipulate people into buying something that they're probably going to end up regretting and having buyer's remorse later? And I think that I think there's a lot of people that lean towards that side, and I really just try not to. But I can see if you were being pressured to do that, or if you were being told you had to do that, I could see how being in sales would be something that would be one of those jobs like a garbage man, where we when you get home at night, you just can't scrub it, scrub the stink off of you.
Well, let me kind of back up and make a distinction. My issue is not with people who have a product and sell that product one time to somebody looking for that solution. There's a that's a whole other can, right? Here's kind of my issue. If you do a craft, like you help people with podcasts, right? That's your craft. Inevitably, whether people are referred to you or you connect with people like you and I did, eventually at some point, there's a process where somebody's going to say, hey, I'd like to give you money for you to do that thing. Maybe I'm wrong, but it would be, in my mind, in your best interest to build solid long-term relationships with people that continue to give you money time after time after time after time. Mm-hmm. Right. So here's the distinction. What I did in my past life was I sold to a crowd of people that they didn't buy one time, hopefully, because the less I had to go out and acquire new clients, the better the relationships I could make, the more money I could make with the less headache. So if you're selling cars, or if you're selling computers, or if you're selling cell phones, or if you're selling a digital product and you're selling it one time to one person, that's a totally different ballgame. If your copy's on point, or if your copywriter's on point, you can make that process happen and the people love you. I'm talking about where people have to have human interaction to quote unquote close the sale. Mm-hmm. I think that most people are either taught that process the wrong way, or they just flat out have the wrong motives. And at the very start of this, at the foundational level of what I think about this, humans in general just communicate with each other the wrong way because we're human, right? We're just a bunch of stupid monkeys, and we're not nice in general. Now, most people are nice, but most people, it's me, 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 and they'll do whatever it takes to get their way. And that's the conundrum in selling. That's why most people have to go out and continue to bring on new clients instead of building a book of clients that love them, that never go anywhere. That's the easy way to do it. It takes more work on the front end, but it's so much easier to build relationships with clients that are long-term, so you can continue providing them service and they continue paying you for it. And you get to work with people you like. That's my whole point.
Nice. So I guess from my experience, if you're doing anything and you have repeat customers that love dealing with you, and after they've made that initial purchase, they were satisfied with it, they really enjoyed the experience, they enjoyed the results of whatever you sold them provided, those people are a lot easier to get them to come back and purchase again, to establish those long-term relationships with. But if you're using pressure tactics, like you were saying, hammering down on the pain points and using false scarcity and manipulating people into buying something that you yourself don't even agree with, those people probably aren't going to come back. Those people are going to be very hesitant to do business with you again in the future. And your job then becomes constantly going out and getting new leads and converting new leads and manipulating new people, which one of the things that I've learned is it's always easier to the amount of effort, the amount of advertising spend that you have to use to get an additional purchase from a satisfied customer is infinitely less costly than it is to go get a new customer after you've burnt the last one.
Absolutely. And here's an analogy that I use. If you have a thing that you sell to people, your customers are basically like friends you would invite over to a barbecue at your house. right? And the food that you're cooking is the product that you make. So first it starts there. Your product has to be solid. And if you feed people well and they have a good time, they generally come back on their own because they want more of that. If you can't cook and your food sucks, i.e. your product's no good or your service isn't any good, they're not going to want to come back. You should never have to beg your friends to come over and eat your barbecue. Make sense?
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. So let's kind of get into, I guess, a little bit of your background story. What was it that you, if you don't mind revealing it, what was it that you were doing that you were unsatisfied with, apparently to the point where it just made you quit altogether? And then what kind of drew you back into sales and advertising and marketing?
Sure. So my last lifetime was spent selling financial services to businesses. You've seen pictures of me. I don't know how the podcast is going to be promoted, but I'm a tree hugger and kind of a redneck, and I like four wheeling. And so I grow a beard. I've kind of got a personality. Well, I was selling to people that wear suits. And so initially, like to begin with, the people that I was selling the thing I sold to, in not work life, I wouldn't have hung out with. They wouldn't have been my friends in real life, right? So I'm having to be a certain kind of person to be able to sell the thing that I was selling, because naturally me and those people wouldn't have really gotten along. So that was really the first piece of it. I got so good at the process, quote unquote, the sales process, greet, find out what their wants and needs are, figure out the fit, and then close them, that I could basically, if I could keep somebody on the phone and there was a need for the service that I was selling, they would buy. And that's all fine and great and dandy, but salespeople that get to that point generally are really, really, really good on the onset. But then once you have to deal with that customer after that point, you start kind of regretting it, like buyer's remorse, but now it's seller's remorse. So you're dealing with somebody that you can't really stand, but you have to continue servicing them. The world that I came from, it was an ongoing process. Once they bought, they were using a service, they would continue to use that service until either you fired them or they fired you. So initially, my biggest complaint with it was, I'm dealing with people I can't stand. And like, it just got worse and worse and worse. The better I got, the more clients I had, the bigger headaches I had, and the more people I couldn't stand I was dealing with. Well, in the world of finance, business to business finance, there's a lot of stress and a lot of pressure because, I mean, I was dealing with Fortune 100, Fortune 1000. The company that I worked for was the number two or number three in the world. And so I was selling globally. And we're talking six figure and seven figure deals where we're helping a company manage their credit information or their credit insurance policy all the way down to their collections. You know, so the people that I was dealing with hate their lives to begin with, most of them, not all of them. And they're pissed off, right? And we're like the safety net. And then sometimes they had issues and it didn't matter how big the net was. It was just that, you know, somebody's getting fired and the world's on fire. So it wasn't a fun thing to be involved with. So I couldn't stand that piece of it. And really, the first 5 or 6 years of being in sales, my motives were off. It was all about how much money could I make instead of who is it that I can help in a way that's meaningful to me, and therefore I'm just naturally financially taken care of. My motives were in the wrong place. Because of that, I ended up with clients that I didn't like, to the point where I wanted to quit doing what I was doing, but I kind of backed myself in a corner in such a way that there was no getting out of it. I couldn't go take 6 or 12 months to learn another thing and replace the income that I had. And with two little kids, I was like, holy crap, what am I going to do? So does that kind of answer that question?
Yeah, and it kind of adds light to the subject too, because the way that I came into, I used to actually be very anti-capitalist. I was very pro-socialist, anarcho-socialist almost. And it wasn't until I started learning about economics and started learning about, I guess, free markets and understanding that capitalism works best when both parties feel fulfilled in the agreement. And it wasn't until I started approaching sales as or just business in general as I'm here to serve people. I'm here to make sure that people that have something that I can offer have their needs fulfilled. It wasn't until then that I actually started getting serious about business. So I didn't go into business saying, I want to be able to make a bunch of money. I went into business when I finally got the bug of entrepreneurship. It was because I was constantly being told that I had these skills and that they could serve people. And I finally started understanding economics to a point where my kind of view of business and sales is, you know, if both parties walk away from the transaction feeling like they left with more than what they went into, that's a good example of what capitalism should be. So I guess the way that I come about it kind of protects me from and maybe blinds me from seeing that other aspect of so many salespeople out there that aren't in it for the best intentions of the actual customer, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of brings me to the second part of your question. How did I change that? Like, I mean, ultimately I quit the sales game, but I was halfway through my tenure, essentially. Here's what it comes down to. There's two ends of the sales spectrum when it comes to jobs, right? There's the super, super high end. People who work for IBM, people who work for Cisco, people who work for Chrysler, really the 0.001% of the salespeople that truly make more money than any other person pretty much across the board. I mean, the old saying, high paid salespeople can make more money than anybody else. That's a fact, mm-hmm. right? People who are selling Boeing jets, and they're the top guy in that industry, they make a huge amount of money. Well, their credentials, their training, and all of their life experiences that got them to that point, they were never on a sales floor, telemarketing, cold calling, hundreds of phone numbers a day. So that brings us to the other end of the spectrum. Most salespeople, and I'm going to probably piss a lot of people off here, but most salespeople are shitty, suck people, right? They can't get a job elsewhere because they've got issues or they don't have the skills or whatever. And so they get hired on for a phone job. And typically they're, you know, they act like eighth grade boys, angry, aggressive, me, me, me. And that's kind of the mindset. So from that standpoint, when that type of person is selling a thing one time, they don't give a shit about the person who bought and now is gone, you know, unless there's the possibility of a chargeback and it affecting their paycheck. So it's really easy to have the, you know, I'm out for me and screw you and I don't care what happens. Like, you bought the thing, tough. There's a lot of people in that sales world. And that's why a lot of salespeople have a bad rap, because of other people. Now, take that into context and then look at my situation where I was. I was painted in a corner. I was making really good money. I was doing something that ultimately I couldn't stand, but I was really good at it. And I really understood the industry and what I was selling. Ultimately, I took a look at, you know, like I said a couple of times, I've got kids. Right now, they're almost 14 and just turned 15. We're going back like 6-7 years. And where I was at that point, my kids were just starting to become not little kids anymore. And the whole identity and understanding that they're an actual separate little human being than, you know, from the family. And the mindset in a little person like that changes. And all of a sudden, as a parent, you have to adjust the way you manage the relationship with your kid, because all of a sudden they realize, oh, I can actually tell you no, and there's really only a couple of different things you can do about that. Interesting. So I'm going through that process at the same time. I'm having the, I can't stand my life. I can't stand my job. I hate my clients. And I kind of noticed myself adjusting how I dealt with my kids. And at first it didn't really like consciously occur to me, but at some point I was like, huh, managing the relationship with my kids in a different way from a different standpoint allowed me to have a different kind of relationship with my kids. And I began to apply that to my job. I began telling certain clients, no, I'm, you know, that I'm not doing that. We can't do that. It costs more than that. Whatever the thing was, it was no longer trying to figure out how to make it work, force that square peg into a round hole. It was all about figuring out, okay, if I make this decision with this client, am I going to be able to avoid that kind of outcome that I don't want? Mm. And so the process changed. And then pretty soon the way I went about prospecting clients changed. And ultimately I ended up with a different kind of client.
Well, I'm going to have to cut you off right there because we're going to come up on a break real quick.
Sure.
But I definitely want to explore this further. So Landon Porter is our guest today of The Sales Gorilla, and we're going to get more into his story and hopefully start getting into some tips about how small business owners out there can utilize the things that Landon has discovered and implemented into his process and help make more sales in your business without having to be that pushy, greedy, disgusting salesperson that I guess nobody really wants to be. Landon, we'll be right back. Thank you for joining us. And listeners, stick around. We'll be right back on the other side of this break.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. You like listening to podcasts, don't you? Have you ever thought about starting a podcast of your own? If you're a hardcore podcast fan, you probably have, and you've probably got something great to share with the world. I'm Nathan Frazier, and I've created a free online podcasting course for people just like you. Pre-Launch Secrets gives you the top 5 secrets you need to know in order to launch a successful podcast. You'll learn how to create the core concept of your podcast, how to build a solid audience, and how to consistently generate great content for that audience. These are the secrets the pros use when coming up with ideas for their podcasts. And after this course, you'll have them all at your disposal. The course is free. It's taught by me. Enroll today. Go to podcastblastoff.com/course. That's podcastblastoff.com/course. Podcast Blastoff, the future of podcasting.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handycar's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
And we're back, Free Market Squad, in the place to be. Before we jump back into this week's interview with Landon Porter of The Sales Gorilla, I do want to give a huge shout out and thank you to a couple of people. First of all, Chris and Shri Gio over at Truth Frequency Radio Network for picking up and airing this here propaganda. Much love and thank you for that. Also, Jules over at UCY.TV. for picking up and simulcasting this here propaganda. Much love and thank you for that. And of course, Ian Freeman and the gang over at LRN.FM, the Liberty Radio Network. Thank you for picking up this propaganda, putting it out on the airwaves for all of your listeners to be propagandized with. I do appreciate it. Let's jump back into the interview. All right, Free Market Squad, we are back. I've got Landon Porter of The Sales Gorilla on the air. We're talking about business lessons that, well, let's just kind of pick up where we left off. You were talking about how having your children go from, I guess, the early age where children are completely dependent on you. They look at you as the unquestionable authority in life. And then they start becoming individuals and they start realizing that they have a little bit of self-ownership, and that's always a strange transition as a parent. And you started kind of having a change of mind about your own business, your own career, that was kind of in sync with what was going on with your children. I'd kind of like to get into that. What was it about parenting at that particular stage of life that kind of started working its way into the way you looked at your career?
Sure. So dealing with little kids as a parent, being a parent, there's 100 million different ways to parent. Really, there's probably 3 or 4 billion ways to parent, right? Well, at a point where kids somewhere between 6 and 7, sometimes 8, 9, you have to be less of a director and more of a facilitator. And what I noticed was the selling process being strong, determined, persistent, aggressive enough, pack leader, alpha, whatever you want to call it, you can basically push somebody through a sales process. Like you can push your kid through, you know, don't touch the stove, it's hot. And as a director, you can direct them. And the more, it's the right way to say it, the more expert you are at that directing, the more you can get the results ultimately that you're looking for. However, the problem with that, with kids, just because you want a certain outcome doesn't mean that that's the outcome they want or that's what's best for them. And understanding that process, here's what the issue was. My kid is really, really intelligent, smarter than I am by a long ways, but he hates doing homework, right? I don't remember liking homework when I was in school, and I'm not sure about you, Nathan, but most kids don't like homework.
I hated homework.
Right. Well, my little man despised it so much that there wasn't a consequence he wasn't willing to take, period. And what occurred to me in that process of forcing him to do the thing was if I allowed some natural consequences to happen, he was much more willing to take ownership of his half of the thing, right? And that translated over into dealing with clients in being more of a facilitator and more of a guide and less of a director.
So hold on real quick. I'm going to let you get back to that, but I want to unpack that a little bit. One of the problems that I always had with school was the coercive nature of it. And my experience was I would constantly get A's, 100% on all of the tests. Even if I didn't do the homework, I was still able to absorb the knowledge and regurgitate it. And I felt like I'm at school, I'll focus on school. When I'm at home, I don't need to focus on this because I'm already getting 100%. But I'd still fail the classes because they wanted me to spend that extra time at home doing the homework when I felt it was redundant. And it made me, the force aspect of it just made me push back even further. It made it to where I would just dig my heels in, and I ended up ditching school and not seeing the value of what the little bit of education I could glean from it. It really ended up pushing me further away because it wasn't the natural consequences. It was just forced consequences. So I'd like to, I guess, have you explain a little bit more what you meant about letting him take ownership and natural consequences.
Sure. So as an older kid, 12, 13, you know, junior high and high school, if you miss the window of opportunity to allow a kid to take responsibility for what it is that they do, they get to the point where I was in the same boat. I don't know how old you were when that was your process. I could totally get A's and B's on everything, but I never did the homework. I had a little slightly different situation though. My dad had the fear of God in me, right? And it was a healthy fear of God. And what it came down to was you can do this and you can do that and you can do this other thing if you X. And X was stay out of trouble and get good grades. So the way I figured out how to do it was I could get my homework done in the class. Like if class today was this and there was a 20 question thing that was going home as homework, I'd do it there, like right then and there, or in the next class. And so I never had homework. But back to what you brought up, a couple of points. Coercion, right? And when you're like coerced or persuaded to do something that you don't want to do, you dig your heels in. Well, apply that to the sales process. Okay, well, let's get back to your question. How did I deal with that with my kid? Well, when children are beginning to figure out that they are their own unit, right? Like, yeah, I can't go to the grocery store and I can't drive myself to school and there's some things I can't do, but I'm beginning to figure out I'm my own person. And ultimately, I have say-so. When that begins to happen, if you allow them to have a couple of issues that they don't know how to figure out, and then they're looking for help and guidance on figuring that out, then you can use that. It's no longer a director. It's a facilitator. It's a guide process. Does that make sense?
Yeah, perfect sense.
Okay. Now, in that, there's some issues that kids in that age deal with, and they're big issues, like they were mean to a kid at school and now everybody hates them, or everybody's angry with them, right? Or they weren't nice to somebody, and because of that, now they're in trouble. There's a bunch of different examples like that, but kids given the rope will
hang themselves.
Usually, right. And that's kind of the process with raising kids, is you give them a little bit of rope and see how they manage that. And then you give them a little bit more rope. And when they hang themselves, you pull in the rope a little bit. Well, if you're always 2 inches away from the leash, so to speak, they don't ever have the ability to like start figuring out some things on their own and start making decisions. So you have to give them some rope. Well, dealing with clients is really no different. They're just, you know, a little bit older people and they've got more experience, but it's the same kind of mentality. Instead of being totally controlling and totally coercive and totally persuasive, you give them enough rope and see what they do with that.
Okay. So how did that, I guess maybe get into some examples of how that changed the way that you went about looking for the types of people you were serving and the way that you were serving the people that you were serving.
Sure. So using that same example, using a sales process that can get you the salesperson whatever you want is the same thing. You're so choked up on the leash that you've got such tight control over the animal on the end of that leash that you can kind of make them do whatever they want. Eventually, that leads to a problematic animal. Now, in this case, the analogy is a dog. If you've got a dog that's leash trained, but you can take to the park off the leash and the dog still hangs out and comes back and doesn't go chase cars and all that, that's a self-learned thing. You as the dog trainer can't like force them to understand that. Clients are the same way. What I figured out was my sales process was so good that I was always choked up on that leash. The client only had an inch or two, right? And so they were in my control as long as that leash was on, as long as that collar was on. But as soon as that was let go, meaning there's an issue, something outside of what I had predicted as, you know, managing their account, then they became a raging lunatic animal, totally out of control. And that was problematic. So going back to the kid thing, becoming more of a facilitator and less of a director changed my sales process in that when I began to prospect for clients, if I noticed that I was having to like forcefully redirect somebody and overcome an objection, they were eventually going to be a problem. Now, there's a difference here when I say overcoming an objection. If somebody has an objection, it's only ever because they're not qualified well enough. They don't understand what you're talking about. If they don't understand what you're talking about, they've got an issue because something doesn't make sense. Most salespeople will overcome that objection because if there's no longer an objection, then there's no reason not to buy. Well, in that process, if somebody has an actual objection and you two aren't a fit, even if you overcome that objection and everybody's on the same page, you're going to end up with somebody that you don't want to manage as a client. Mm-hmm. So in that process, letting go a little bit of that control of the sales process allowed me to not force people into a situation they didn't want to be in, which ultimately led to fewer and fewer and fewer problems. I also learned who it was that I wanted to have conversations with because it was a phone thing, right? So the more people that I was having better conversations with, less stress, less headache, less nonsense, the better my clients got. That makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've kind of seen the same thing in my business is a lot of people come to me. I think even we had probably a similar conversation. A lot of people come to me and say, well, this is what I want to do, and assume that I can take, that I can fit all of those needs. And so I typically go through a process where I find out exactly what they are, as far as what they're looking for, as far as what their technical needs are going to be. And I actually end up turning away more people than I take on just because I don't feel like it would be a good fit. And I don't want their expectations not to be met because I don't have the ability to do it. Or I don't want them getting into something and then later realizing that they got into the wrong thing, or they got something that they weren't expected because I kind of maliciously held certain information back from them, and now they're stuck in a situation that they don't want to be in, or now I'm stuck in a situation trying to meet needs that I don't feel comfortable meeting. I think a lot of times if your only goal is to make the sale, you're going to end up being miserable. But if your goal is to say, kind of hearkening back to what we were talking about earlier, if your goal is to say, let's make sure that both of us feel better off through this relationship, and neither of us feels like one of us is getting the upper hand on the other, it tends to lead to a lot more happy. it tends to have a feeling of serving rather than selling.
Exactly. Well, in your process, and you and I did have that conversation, your process is to qualify people enough. Look, it looks like this, it acts like this, this is what it does, and this is how it does it, instead of what do you need it to do? And then figuring out how to make it supposedly do what it is the person who's buying or wants to buy needs it to be. Totally different mindsets.
Yeah. So let's kind of transition into this is one of the things that I really like about all of your branding is the gorilla imagery. And maybe it's just because for me, back in my rebellious guerrilla warfare days, and I really like the concept of like guerrilla marketing, and I was definitely not born with a silver spoon in my mouth, and I've had to learn a lot of street smart marketing techniques. So I'm kind of drawn to the imagery of your brand, but what is the whole guerrilla theme all about?
Sure. Well, it's got a couple of different perspectives. One, it's spelled like the animal, not the, you know, the type of warfare. However, there that plays on it too. Innovative and unconventional. My sales process is totally unconventional. Well, where it ultimately came from is, again, in that past life, the revolving door in that industry was such that if you made it more than 6 months, you had like a 2% chance to be there in another 12. So the people that were in that industry for 3, 5, 8 years were like the super small percentage. All of the new people coming in were like the sales floor people, like I was talking about earlier. Well, when they bring on a client and they tell them whatever they need to hear to get the sale, eventually somebody has to deal with that because that person's gone. Well, I was one of those people. And in having to manage clients and put out fires and say, no, that's not what it costs. No, that's not how, all of those things. Mm-hmm. I was having a conversation with one of my good friends that I worked with for a long period of time. And we were actually standing outside of his office on the sales floor. And I was heated. I had a really bad experience with a giant, I mean, everybody everybody who's listening to this has products from this company in their home. Somebody brought them on as a client and I had to deal with it. And lo and behold, they were sold a bill of goods and it wasn't what they were expecting. So I'm heated and I'm on the sales floor and I'm having this conversation with my friend. And he's like, man, you seem a little gorilla today. And I was like, yeah, how loose is the verbiage on your podcast, Nathan?
You can say whatever you want to say.
Okay. So he said, you're feeling a little gorilla today. And I said, yeah, these stupid fucking monkeys keep selling clients the wrong shit and lying to them. And then we have to deal with it. And that's kind of where it started. So salespeople, the bad salespeople that I'm talking about, not everybody's like this, but they're loud. They wave their hands. They beat their chest. They beat people over the head on the phone. They abuse people. They're stupid fucking monkeys, right? Well, we're humans, so we're a type of primate. The idea is once you become a gorilla, you no longer have to be loud and wave your hands all the time. It only happens on occasion. And then that led into the whole silverback thing. Once you become so gorilla, so good at the sales process that you're totally choosing the clients that you allow to come on, not in like an I'm better than everybody kind of way, but in such a way that if I'm going to take your money and I'm going to have to deal with you, I'm going to love you because you love me too. You never have to beat your chest. And that's kind of the point. The whole egomaniac, angry eighth grade boy mentality in the sales world, they're like a bunch of stupid monkeys. Right? So now, if you take that whole idea and you put that on top of, I kind of look like a primate, right? Ever since I was a little kid, my mom, she'd get me a stuffed animal. It's always a monkey or a gorilla. So it just kind of, it led that way. And then tying it into the guerrilla marketing thing, this is innovative and unconventional from the standpoint of the way I see the sales process is you help somebody down their own path to answer their own questions and then allow them the space to make a decision. If you've done your job the right way, you never have to ask for the sale. They ask you if they can buy it. It's totally unconventional. It goes against the normal sales process. So all of those things kind of tied together and it was just like the perfect storm of this just makes sense.
Nice. Oh, that's been my experience as well is through the process that I maybe it's just I do it intuitively and I didn't have to go through the really horrible experiences that you went through. But it's been my experience that even when I am completely honest with somebody and I let them know, I really think you'd be better served if you go this way and I point them to one of my competitors, a lot of times they're like, yeah, but I really want to do business with you, not them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Man, there's so many things that we probably don't have time to cover today, but the whole sales process, that interaction with people is no different than dating. And this is an analogy I use on a regular basis. And here's the analogy. When you've got a girlfriend or you've got a boyfriend, everybody wants you. When you don't, nobody does. And that's kind of the process. So when you tell somebody, yeah, that's really cool and you're great and everything, but I don't think we're a fit. They're like, well, but wait, I got to have some of that. No. And that's ultimately, that's attraction marketing at its finest because it comes from the right motives.
Nice. Okay. So who are the people that you serve now that you're not doing the Fortune 1000 and Fortune 500 business to business type stuff? Who are your current clients? What type of stuff do you do for people now?
Sure. So there's a lot of people in the online space specifically, and there's some people in the offline space too that have a craft. And what I mean by that is somebody who does marketing as an agency for clients, or they do copywriters generally never have an issue getting clients. So, but somebody who does a craft, a web developer, a web designer, somebody who has a thing that they do, that's their focus. That's their, in some cases, their passion. But ultimately, they have to have somebody else buy it and give them money for that thing. Most people aren't natural gifted salespeople. And there's a lot of people that have a craft that they're looking to give to people in exchange for money that are having a really hard time doing that because they're not quote unquote salespeople. And there's a lot of information on the internet. There's a lot of information in these groups about how to sell, how to go out and get clients, how to prospect, how to do all those things. And here's this person who's got this craft and they're excellent at the thing they do, but they're scared to death to try and sell their thing to somebody because they don't want to be salesy. So that's who I serve. If somebody has something they would do over and over and over for a client and it would make more sense for them to build a long-term relationship with that client, I help people understand how to figure out the right kind of client for them and then how to take somebody through that process in a way where the person is, okay, can I have that? How much is that? What would it look like? That's who my market is, and that's what I help them with.
Nice. And we don't have very much time, but I would like to kind of get into some of the actual nuts and bolts of it. What are the biggest mistakes that people make, and what is typically the biggest improvement that you can help people with as far as changing their tactics?
Sure. The biggest issue most people have a problem with is they try and sell anybody and everybody. Mm-hmm. They don't understand who their perfect for them client is. And the way that I help them with that is I take people through a process to help them understand who they are, how they operate, and what they actually want in a client relationship. And then I show them how to match the right kind of people as a client to that. Because most people don't want to change. I've got weird quirks and annoying things that I do, but I'm 40. I'm an adult. I'm not going to change how I am and still be happy. But if I can find people that kind of have the same annoying quirks, we're a fit, right? It just makes sense. That's number one. Number two is how to take somebody through a sales process. Scripts suck. You're not an actor. Don't act like a salesperson. There's four or five things that you need to understand and identify when you're actually speaking with another human being who might want to buy your thing. If you can help them understand what those things are and both of you think it's a fit and the wants and needs are a fit on both sides, there's no closing tactics that you need to use. That's two. The third thing is client relationship management. The only difference between a business relationship and a personal relationship is a business relationship pays you to be in that relationship. But you don't want to be friends with somebody you don't like. So why would you let somebody be a client if you might not like them? That's three. Does that help?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So if people want to go and find out more information about what you do, I really have enjoyed, I didn't know exactly what we were going to, I didn't have a very clear idea on where this interview was going to go, but I have to say I'm thoroughly pleased with it. I've loved this conversation. If my listeners have as well, and they want to get more information on what you do or more information on who you are, where can they go to find out more about Landon Porter and the Sales Gorilla?
Sure. So we have a Facebook group, and you can find it at bit.ly/GorillaJuice, GORILLAJUICE.
All right. And I'll make sure to have that in the show notes. Landon, like I said, this has been a fantastic conversation. We didn't really dive too much into any political stuff, which is usually kind of where I start off the interviews. And we kind of avoided that. And we just went straight into the sales stuff. But being able to talk about parenting and how that relates to sales and being able to kind of dive into the more seedier side of sales that maybe people like me intentionally have avoided, but a lot of people have negative feelings about, and just being able to have this raw, honest conversation, it's been refreshing, man. So I really do got to thank you for coming on. And do you mind if any of my listeners friend you on Facebook or check you out that way?
Yeah, that's totally fine. I'm all about the connections, provided they fit. And I just wanted to say this has been fantastic. I really appreciate being on the podcast and having this conversation with you. It's, you know, anybody who is able to say, when I talk about the thing that I do, I learn more about it. That's how conversations work for both people.
Nice. Well, again, thanks for coming on, Landon Porter, the sales gorilla. And we'll definitely have links to your Facebook group in the show notes. Until next time, Free Market Squad, faith in each other, not in authority. Be your own boss. Hashtag BYO boss. We are out of here. Deuces.
Cool, man.
Free minds, free markets, free people.